But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Body or morning, it could be morning. It could be, I don't know when you listen to this podcast, but hopefully it's frequent and often. Welcome back to the show. Mike, hello, how are you? Let's start it right off. Let's jump right into it. Are you infected?
No, but looks like we're going to get close down here in Georgia. We're going to be one of the first people to open up, Scotty.
Oh yeah, you guys are ready to open the floodgates, the COVID floodgates.
So Friday, we got a clearance for. Now this is going to be some fun times, Scotty. We got gyms.
Yes.
We have bowling alleys.
Yes.
We have body art studios, as they list it.
Okay.
Hair and nail salons.
So on Friday, are you going to try to hit like the Georgia quadrifecta? I don't know. I don't know what's after trifecta is what I'm saying.
I'm going all six, man. I'm going to pick up a barbell. I'm going to throw it at some pins. I'm going to get a tattoo while somebody's giving me a mohawk and cleaning my nails.
Get a
I'm
haircut. Do it all. Get your hair did.
Oh yeah.
Nice. So. Welcome back, everybody, or welcome to, if this is your first time tuning in, to the Verbal Shenanigans podcast. It's good to be back. I've been seeing a lot of Mike lately, talking to Mike a lot, and
you lucky.
You know, it's good. We're coming off one of my favorite episodes to date with Doug Clifford of Creedence Clearwater. So we've been trying to put these out twice a week during this pandemic. Who knows? Maybe if we really like it, we'll keep it up. I mean, Mike's going to be open on Friday, so.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Scotty, I know you can hear all the pins going down the background, all the buzzing from the tattoo needles, but we're having a great old time down here in Savannah.
Well, I don't know. Maybe you guys will get it right. I don't know. Doesn't look likely, but maybe get it right. Hopefully you just don't cause a big festering disease pile in Georgia down there.
Basically, Scott, the United States is a big open mic with 50 comedians, and Georgia's the one that said, you know what, fine, I'll go first tonight.
I wonder if comedy shows, whenever they do come back, like if comics will like have their own mics. Like bring your own mic on stage now, like you know, like I'm not talking to that one. So
that'd be intriguing. I'd be kind of expensive. I mean, especially for the dime a dozen comedians. That,
yeah. Like I don't know. It's not the worst idea in the world. You know, like you bring your own mic, plug it in, and you know you're at least safe or only exposed to yourself.
You know, the poor comedians will bring in like a USB headset. I don't know how to get this in here. You guys got Windows 98 on this mic stand?
Yeah, I don't know. Ever-changing world here. So if you are just tuning in. If you're just tuning in, we try to put this out as often as possible during this quarantine times. Mike, have you done any fun Zoom events?
I do a nightly workout with a person Izzy used to work with at a gym. Right. In fact, that's why I'm kind of sweating right now. We just did a 30-minute workout tonight. I would say work-wise, we haven't done anything. The funny thing was, like, when we used to go to the office, we would insist on the cameras being on for our remote people in Costa Rica, kind of. And we would have a camera on us because it's like, oh, it's bonding. We could see each other, blah, blah, blah. Second that pandemic happened where showers were minimal, it's like, no, we don't need video. We don't need to look at each other.
Yeah.
Us Americans are too slavish to work from home. You you Costa Ricans understand the whole bathing and putting on a nice shirt on.
So you're saying that Costa Ricans are always looking good when you zoom with them? Like they're always looking put together?
They're looking like they coming into an office.
I'm expecting more from you now every Monday.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm expecting...
You learn about Costa Rican culture, and now all of a sudden, I got to be the bearer of this new trend.
Yeah, I expect a button-up and a tie each Monday that we see. You know, I got to look at your face, so I might as well look at the best version of you.
Well, it'll be awkward because I do my workouts right before this podcast, so it... be kind of interesting, me being all sweated out through a see-through white collared shirt.
I'm into it.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's in your game?
That's fine. So the reason I was asking, I told you a week ago or whatever, we did a Zoom comedy show, which was interesting. I actually got booked to do another one, so that'll be a fun old time, but...
Your own or doing it for somebody?
No, okay. Same company, same exact company again. So they must have liked it the first time.
Ooh.
So I'll take it. It's something.
Virtual shenanigans.
So a bunch of my friends and I, we've Zoomed the last three or four Fridays, just kind of have a drink and whatever, BS. We played like a couple games and whatnot. Now... I'm going to call my friend for the sake of not selling him out to the audience, if he does. We're going to call him Steve. We'll call him Steve for today.
Okay. Now, out of curiosity, do I know Steve by his real name?
You do. You do.
Okay.
You know Steve. But hold on. My dog is going crazy again. But we'll call him Steve. Now, three straight weeks in a row... Steve, okay, has decided to get obliterated on our Zoom calls. Now, okay, whatever, you know, blowing off some steam or whatnot, and, you know, everybody's probably drinking a little bit more in this quarantine or whatnot, but, you know, we'll have a beer or two, you know, maybe three while we're just sitting there hanging out. And Steve, you can start to see him, like, you know when Iron Man's, like, collecting damage in his suit? And like he can't continue, like Jarvis is kind of taking over, and he's like, you know, damage to suit 10%. Like you can start to see him decline on Zoom.
Okay, so just out of curiosity, is he a lightweight or is he drinking more than what the group is going through?
Well, he's definitely not a lightweight in real life. He's you know, he's a beer drinker. Like he likes his beer, and he always has. So
is he pre-zooming is the question.
I think here's kind of what we're trying to figure out. This is why I'm kind of bringing this up. So he, you know, he seems to be at a good pace on the Zoom. I mean, unless we're seeing him, he's doing something, like you said, pre-zooming or outside the Zoom. But, you know, he's keeping a pretty steady pace. And we can tell the drunker he gets, he's starting to crack him a little bit more frequently. But nothing to the effect where you'd be like, okay... like, why is this guy getting demolished like this? We've hung out at their house thousands of times, you know, barbecues and whatnot. So 3 weeks in a row now, Steve has collected enough damage to just fall and leave the Zoom call. So black out and fall and pass out while the Zoom call is going on.
Like, was this just a slow progression or just literally like black out, blam? He's gone.
Well, like I said, we can start. Like, even on Friday, I text my friends who were on the call. I'm like, oh, Steve is going down. I said, it's probably 10 minutes because he's starting to rest his head on the microphone, like, not on the computer. And he's getting real, like, emotional. Like, 2 weeks in a row, he's brought up the same topic about his, like, children and work and stress. And then 10 minutes later, you just see the Zoom screen empty. Just nobody there.
But, I mean, are you seeing, like, a straight flop? Or just like, I'll be right back and just...
Hard to say. He doesn't say he would be right back. But you do see him like kind of stagger off the screen and then it's over. So, you know, the next morning, be like, oh, what happened? And you're like, oh, yeah. But it's like, were you on the floor? You're like, yeah, I was on the floor. And then I had to wake up and I went on the couch and whatnot. We're like, oh, okay. You know, it was funny the first time, whatever. You know, maybe he fell asleep. But then Steve does it again the next week. Real bad, gets real emotional, then boom, gone. And then finally on Friday, like, the joke was like, dude, what do you got to go for back-to-back, you know, a three-peat of blackouts? And he's like, nah, man, I'm good. I'm good. All of a sudden, that Iron Man suit starts taking damage again. You know, systems, it's like someone pulled a plug and he's just gone. Just gone. And again, 3 weeks in a row.
So he's the Michael Jordan of Zoom drinking.
Correct. But did you start that Michael Jordan doc at all?
I've heard about it. I'm going to have to see if they're replaying it so I can catch it. I'm guessing they're replaying it because Lord knows what else are they going to put on ESPN.
It's on demand if you have on demand. But Michael Jordan, his eyes are like yellow, dude. There's something wrong. I made a joke today. I said I'm going to start calling him Air Jaundice because his eyeballs are like yellow. There's something up. Michael Jordan has not aged that well for being like... You know, the great, arguably the greatest athlete of all time. If anything, he's going to be on every single person's top five greatest athletes of all time list. He has not aged that well. I think he might. Jordan, I think, has a. I think he might also get drunk on Zoom calls. And he, I know he likes to smoke cigars as well. I think he might have. He might live kind of the party life post basketball.
Can you imagine the money you could have made if you can go back to 93 and. I think it was around 93 where Magic made his announcement and go, all right, you see him? You see Jordan? I guarantee you Magic's going to look better in 2020.
Yeah.
Now, you would have made top dollar on that bet. Right
there. Yeah, those odds would be like one in a thousand. But so the point is, so I guess I ask you, so what do you do with Steve here? Steve's obviously got something going on, and I think Steve might... I think it might be a health thing, like, like, because the guy has always been a drinker, you know, like, or whatever, but it's almost like he can't process the alcohol or something like that, like something, I don't know if he's on a medication or something, like, you know, like maybe the two things are colliding, but it's pretty sad when you have 3 weeks straight of blacking out on a Zoom phone call.
Yeah, I would try to do it as sensitively as possible. I think what I would do is change the time of the Zoom meeting, not allow him on there, and just maybe have a one-on-one Zoom. It's just like, we'll just say Joe and Kevin couldn't make it. It's just you and me tonight, bud, and maybe have a one-on-one with him.
Yeah,
just
yeah.
Kind of chat away and kind of tick at the problem because – I mean, that's a lot of signs to something is really going on ahead, whether it's just alcohol consumption, whether it's stress, whether there's something that's not out there in the open. But when you're going out of the way to get pass out drunk for this situation, like I even know some people like it's one of those. All right, we're having a public event. It's like, oh, God, Steve is going to do it again. Exactly. But. If you don't have like the go out party kind of thing, they're kind of calm or whatever. But this seems like his whole day is revolving around, oh, thank God, I'm going to just be drinking and drinking with the boys and just letting loose and no, there's no stress out there.
Yeah. And it's funny because in some ways you're like, it's super pathetic over a Zoom call, but in some ways you're like, at least he's in his home and his like basement, you know, and like not driving or not out in public. But I don't know, man. It's a conundrum I can't quite figure out, and I don't know what to say to him because he jokes about it like the next day, and it's like I don't know. Like even the last time, like the couple people in the call that were so, and I'm just picturing this image of the Zoom call continuing as his dead body's like on the ground, and you just hear us like ha ha ha, like talking, you know, like I'm just picturing that image in my head.
Going off of what you said, the ultimate thing would be to find out he actually was in another person's house taking this Zoom call. Is that an Indian couple in the background? Wait a minute. Where are you at? Hey, you know how it is. We didn't have good internet. Went over to the neighbor's house.
What if he was on like two Zoom calls and he really wasn't passing out? He was just leaving to go attend to the other one.
Yeah. Free Bird does rock, but we really need to go over the numbers, Steve.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. And even like the last time, like even like the people who were left on the Zoom call, there was kind of like, God, like everybody was like, oh man, like, I don't know what's going on with Steve here. So,
yeah, I think you just gotta kind of pull the plug on him doing that, because it's like I said, he's literally in his head looking forward to this, and he is not letting go. Three in a row, like even two times, you can sit back and say, yeah, this pandemic is playing games with all of us. Man, yeah. Third time, it's like, all right, you're developing a habit.
Yeah.
It's not going to stop just because we say, bro, why don't you calm it down? It's not like anybody can grab a beer from him to stop him. So
yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. It's an interesting scenario. One, I never thought, I never thought I'd be hanging out with my friends over Zoom to begin with. And honestly, it hasn't been that bad. And it's like, I'm curious after this is all done, if we'll like, we don't get to see each other that often. If we'll be like, hey, let's Zoom tonight, I'm also curious how Zoom, I don't know if we talked about this, how did Zoom grab like the title of being like the conference? Because like Skype, you've been able to do this for a long time. Facebook Messenger, FaceTime, like, I don't know. Zoom just became like the standard for conference calls, like video calls.
I would only assume because you could see like everybody's picture. Like with Skype, it's like whoever's talking generally you can only see. I don't know how they took over. I mean, like in our company, we use WebEx a lot. We use Microsoft Teams. But yeah, everybody's like, let's get on a Zoom. I mean, I don't know who owns it, but they're a happy person right now.
Yeah. My parents are like Zooming with their friends and like having dinner and stuff. It's quite interesting. But I don't know. We'll see what happens with Steve this week.
Well, I can throw tough love out there if you want. You did. When he's clean and close to passing out, go, Steve, I just got word. They lifted all the stay at home. Let's go meet at the bar.
Yeah.
Cops will take care of the rest.
Yeah, no, that wouldn't be good. I don't think his wife would appreciate that too much. But, yeah, I don't know. I'll have to
make it a local bar. Make it something where he stumbles over there. Don't give him the car keys.
I will keep you updated on Steve next week and see if anything changes, because I assume we're going to try to Zoom again this Friday, so nothing else going on. So
if it happens again, we're going to have to develop the Steve drinking song.
Yeah. So I guess that's a interesting thing. I mean, the only way I could segue out of this is, speaking of Michael Jordan and basketball, we have a returning guest tonight. One of our very good guests from, it's been several years now. And he was college basketball coach, got very famous when he, not famous, got a lot of recognition for when he put a kid that went by the name of J-Mac into a game. J-Mac, was autistic and, ended up sinking threes. I think it was like 21 points or something like that. And he kind of went on, they've stayed together. He's worked for all different, foundations and whatnot. And, Coach Jim Johnson is going to come back on the podcast, and we're going to give him a call.
Okay. That's usually how it works.
All right. Let's get Jim Johnson on the line.
Evening, Coach.
Good evening, Mike. How are you?
I guess we've had some better times, but
right?
It's been a struggle. It's unprecedented as far as something. Like I was talking to somebody today, the fact that we've had, catastrophes and other things, but it didn't stop the world like this has. So.
Yeah. This is definitely something unprecedented that both you and your parents' generation have not lived through. So it's pretty interesting, that's for sure.
Yeah, without a doubt.
So, Coach, since you were on Verbal Shenanigans like 3-4 years ago, I'm sure your life has changed, and the notoriety has been rolling in, and people recognize you on the streets everywhere since you were on our podcast. So how's it been since we last talked to you?
Things are good. I retired from coaching, so that's been a new change. I can't remember exactly when I still coaching then? I can't remember.
It's been a while.
This is my fourth year out. So that was a new change. And so I've been mainly as far as the business aspect, focusing on, my speaking and, my small team that I work with, they really want me to write another book. So that's one of the things that I'm And since we're in this time where everything is slowed to a snail's pace, I think it probably is a time. I'm actually, that's on my agenda to start putting a book outline together. And so I think that'll be something that'll, because I did a book a while ago, and I was proud of how it came out, but boy, it's a very time-consuming thing. So.
Right.
Was that a planned retirement? Were you aiming for that time frame, or was it just with the other commitments that you feel it was the right time?
Yeah, it was one of those where, you know, after the JMAC game, you know, I mean, it certainly changed my life in many ways, and certainly for most cases for the good. But I just got to the point where I was, you know, I really started really enjoying speaking, and I still, you know, there's going to be parts of me that I will miss coaching, you know, so I'll take that to my grave, because I did it for 35 years. I was a head coach for 30 years. So that part, you know, there's parts of it, you know, the building of a team and the relationships, you know, those things are things I'll always miss. There are certainly parts that I don't miss. But yes, it was my second to last year of coaching is the best team I ever had. And I had a really good player, and I decided after that year, we lost in the state championship, and we only had the really good player was a junior. Everybody else, all our other best players were all seniors. And I said, you know what, I'm going to take him through, and then I'm going to turn it over to my assistant coach. And so he's been at it for 4 years now. But so it's actually kind of a shame. My player that I talked about there, his name was Anthony Lamb. He ended up going to Vermont, and he's a two-time player of the year of the league, and they actually were going to play in their championship game of their conference tournament to go to the NCAA tournament. And of course, that's when everything stopped.
So
it's kind of a tough ending for his career, but he's a marginal, some scouting reports I see is he may be a second round draft pick. Some reports I see that he's not going to get drafted. I think he'll get an NBA camp, and whether he can make it or not, I'm certainly hoping for the best. So
now, do you still have your contacts in the game and whatnot, as far as, like you said, you know, the one kid who's, you know, close to being drafted, but do you still have like outreach to some of your players or whatnot, or are you kind of have?
Yeah, I try to stay in touch with a decent amount of my, of course, you know, different age, and the fact that, you know, I'd like some of my Facebook friends, so I'll see them that way. And, you know, I try to be cognizant of staying. I actually only have, out of all the kids I coach, I have three left. I had two that were, I had a fifth year senior at a Division II school, and ironically, they qualify for the NCAA tournament at Division II, and then, of course, they didn't get a chance to play. And then I had one young man that was a sophomore on my last year that actually is in playing college basketball. In fact, he was a junior college player that actually just signed a Division I college scholarship. And then the other young man that's at Vermont. So I try to stay in touch with as many of my guys that I can. And in fact, I reconnected 30 years ago. I coached in a small town about 30 minutes outside of Rochester, and a young man that played for me there, you know, I only coached there 2 years before I went to Greece, where it was my hometown, and he actually reached out to me about 4 or 5 years ago, and he's a plumber in California. My son actually lives in Los Angeles, so I've actually been out. I've actually spoke at his plumbing organization. I've seen him 3 or 4 times, because when I get out to California to see my son, I try to connect with him as well. So that's been kind of neat.
So since you've been now coaching, you've been doing a lot of inspirational speaking. I'm kind of curious. Like, me and Scott, we're big sports guys, and all of those touching stories will always, you know, hit our heartstrings. Do you ever get into a scenario where you're dealing with people who are, like, not very sports-oriented? Or how can you kind of cross the line from your experiences to getting to a point?
Well, for me, because I've ended up now where I speak to a decent amount of businesses, and I started mainly as like a motivational, inspirational speaker, and I still do those talks. But I probably the last 4 or 5 years, because leadership was really one of my favorite subjects. And you know, when I got fired, my first coaching head job at 25 years old, and that was a really humbling experience, but it ended up being a really good one because it woke me up. I was pretty arrogant. Again, thought I knew everything that was about coaching, and of course led that first team to 1 win and 18 losses, so that wasn't so good. But it really made me realize that I had a lot to learn about, you know, how to run a team and how to leadership. So I've studied a lot about leadership, and I still read extensively and talk to, and, you know, making the transition to speak to businesses. Certainly there's a lot of things that are the same in leadership, whether you're leading a high school basketball team or a multi-million dollar company. But there's certainly a lot of things I did have to learn, that I didn't do when I was, coaching basketball. So I've spent a lot of time continuing to learn the craft of, how I can use the leadership skills that I have, and also, have some studies behind them and some research, with the various ways that I can help business leaders. So
it's funny. I got a email from our friend Susan, and it was like, an update of some of the things you were doing, and there's a picture of you on there, and I couldn't believe. Not the picture of you, but I couldn't believe how tall your friend and your athlete J-Mac has gotten over the years. I think he's towering over you at this point.
Yeah, that was actually, I'll tell you a funny story that I was always wondering whether he would get a growth spurt, because his parents have an interesting dynamic. His dad is 6'6", and his mom is 5'2". He was always really little. I mean, when he came into our program, he was like 5'6", 100 pounds as a sophomore. And then his senior year, he was like a whopping 5'9", 120 pounds. And he was so weak physically. I mean, he couldn't pick up 100 pounds on a bench press. I mean, that's how weak he was. And then, but the year after he graduated, he went on a growth spurt. He grew, he's about 6'2 now. And the other thing is, he was always into, working out, although, it didn't show in high school. But then he just put on muscle, and he bench presses like 250 pounds Jeez. Now. And he's like 6'2", 170 pounds, and, he's become actually a way above average marathon runner.
Really?
And the story I wanted to actually close with you on that is, the next year after that, we were still getting inquiries from people all over the world, and this Japanese TV station contacted the school and said, we want to come in and do a follow-up story on J-Mac. And so we met these people that came in from Japan, in our gym, and when they walked in, Jason was like shooting baskets over in the corner, and I was in, and I greeted him, and they said, well, where's Jason? I said, he's right there. And he said, oh, no, that's not him. Because, he got so much bigger. And I said, no, that's him. He's just grown up a lot.
Yeah, it's funny. You see the picture the picture with him holding up the basketball from your game, however many years ago that was at this point. Then you see the picture next to you. He looks like he can carry you around at this point.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question. In fact, I used to always kid people in coaching that because I'm about 5'10", and if I was looking down at most of my players, that's probably not a good sign in basketball.
Yeah, right.
But if I'm looking up, that's a good sign, for my whole for Jason's high school career, I was always looked down at him, but right now I look up to him. So I don't remember, but did I tell you the marathon story that he did?
I don't think so.
I don't think so. Yeah. I was going to bring that up.
Yeah, so after that game, the next year, he didn't go to college, and he still works at a local grocery store called Wegmans, which is, yeah, I think it's in 7 states now, but the guy, Robert Wegman, he's passed away, actually is from Rochester, and so his first few stores were in the Rochester area. But anyways, so after the first year, he comes back and he says, "Coach, I really miss the program. Can I come back and help in some way?" And so he was my volunteer assistant for like my last 9 years in coaching, and we did so much together. And so about 4 years into that, he had been a runner in high school as well, and he wasn't very good back then, but as you saw, he's got so much bigger and stronger. So he walks in my office one day and he says, "Coach, I love coaching. I appreciate you, keeping me with you." But he goes, "I really miss competing myself." And I said, "What do you got in mind?" He says, "I'm going to run the Rochester Marathon." I said, "Really, Jason?" I said, "We always were big talking and a goal." So I said, "Well, what's your goal for the Rochester Marathon?" He says, "Coach, I want to qualify for the Boston Marathon." And so I don't know if you guys have any background. I was a runner in high school, although I've not run a marathon. I know, a decent amount about running, didn't realize how fast, marathons are and that kind of thing and how difficult they are.
Yes.
And I said, "Well, what's the qualifying time for your age in the Boston Marathon?" He says, 3 hours and 5 minutes. And I gulped really hard. I said, "Jason, do you realize how fast a marathon that is?" And he goes, "Oh, Coach, I've upgraded my training. I've met with Coach Shoemaker. He was our cross-country coach." So he runs the first Rochester Marathon, and he runs it in 3 hours, 1 wow. minute, and 50 seconds. Mm. So he qualifies, and here's the little crazy sidelight is he could have gone to the Boston Marathon that next year, and for whatever reason, I have no idea why, but he told me like a week later, he goes, "Coach, I think I've got to do it one more time before I can go to the Boston Marathon." The ironic thing was that next year, when he could have gone, he had qualified, was when they had the bombing, which is amazing. Wow. And so he ends up doing the Rochester Marathon again that following year and qualifies again. This time he goes 3 hours and like 46 seconds. So I met with him, like a week after that marathon. I says, "Well, are you going now?" And he goes, "Yep, I'm going to Boston." I said, "Well, what's your goal for that?" He says, "Coach, I'm going to break 3 hours." And I said, "Jason, do you realize the Boston Marathon is a much more difficult course than Rochester? It's got Heartbreak Hill." He goes, "Coach, I'm going to do it." And he pushed his training harder. He runs his first Boston Marathon, 2 hours, 58 minutes, and 46 That's awesome. Seconds. And I was like, this kid is just amazing. So, the funny thing for me in my career was Jason Senior, when we had the magical game, was we ended up winning our first sectional title, and then we ended up winning 6 in total. So that was kind of my 4-minute mile marathon, barrier that I broke. But I kid people, because Jason came back and he was involved with 5 of the 6 that we won. And I said, "For a small fee, I'll rent him out to everybody." And because he's got a magical touch for sure.
It's awesome.
Yeah, that's just incredible. And just to give background, I've done a half a marathon in 2.5 hours, so I'm going to have to get some tips from J-Mac.
So you can appreciate how fast 3 hours and 5 minutes are. And I think he's run like 14 marathons, wow. And I think the fastest he's ever run, not at Boston, but one of the other ones, I think he ran 2:56 someplace. So
that's incredible. Yeah. I even see in probably around the time we talked to you, he played in one game for a minor league basketball team local to Rochester.
Yeah, he did. He actually they set it up, and he actually got in it. I think he scored, I can't remember, it was like 8 or 10 points. He made a few baskets. It wasn't just one basket, and that was pretty neat that he did. Unfortunately, that team ended up disbanding, so he hasn't done anything local in the last couple of years, but that was really cool, and he's still coaching. He helps out. Since when I retired, he hooked on with one of my colleagues at the school, but ironically, my colleague at the school coaches soccer at the school I was at, but actually does basketball at another school, so he's actually broke allegiance because he's helped this guy for the last 4 years since I left. So,
So, Coach, what is what's your life like these days? I know you're still doing different speaking, and you said you're working on possibly a second book and whatnot. What is your current life like?
Well, it's certainly a lot different than I would ever thought. Although, you know, I have some daily routines. I call it my big five that I do every day. So those are things that I, you know, that part hasn't changed. But as far as like, I kind of chuckled because, when I was coaching until towards the real end of my career, I was never into social media. And now I'm little on social media all the time because it's part of speaking business. We do all kinds of things. I do a weekly blog. We do a monthly newsletter. I do video series. We just actually did a leadership webinar, that we shared with people. And so I try to do things to give to people. I still do some work with a local autism group. And and then my wife retired a couple of years ago, so we're actually both at home. And although she said to me with this coronavirus that something's got to break because we're seeing too much of each other right now.
Like on average, how often are you on the road, and like how much time do you need to prepare for each event?
Well, it's it kind of goes in streaks. Like sometimes I'll be traveling. I think last year I had 35 events, and probably a dozen of them were out of town. I'm getting out of town once or twice a month, that type of thing, and then I'm trying to do some things local as well. And prep is, I have, a foundation of the talks I do, and I've developed a couple other talks. But it's a lot more preparation than people think. I mean, I've been speaking to some college students about, preparing for a presentation. And I said, people think that I just walk up and, because I've done it quite a bit that I can, I have a whole practice routine. I make sure I practice my talk because, I do put in some things to customize it to the audience, even though the foundation's the same. But I write up notes and I outline and then I practice it. I have an office that I practice. And then the other thing that I've taught college students is that I will practice the intro and the close multiple times because those are the most impactful. If you don't start off well, right. you lose your audience right away and you want to leave them, with a bang and some type of call to action. And it's been a fun journey in the sense that I've learned a lot about the speaking business. I joined the National Speakers Association. In fact, tell you a quick story on that. When I first started speaking, I was at an event in Chicago, and it went pretty well, and I had a guy from the audience come and talk to me after, and he says, Coach, you got a lot of potential to be a really good speaker. And I said, oh, thank you. He says, you should join the National Speakers Association. And I looked at him because I was absolutely clueless. I said, what is that? And he explained, he goes, that's where a lot of the big speakers, it's an organization. And so I joined. I've actually been a member for 10 years. It was a great bit of advice. And so I've gone to their national conference in the summer for the last 10 years, which has been really good because I've met a lot of speakers. And it's a very fascinating thing because they'll have like over 1,000 people from all over the world at this event. And you'll sit next to people. And, sometimes you'll see someone that, is very famous, but a lot of times it might be someone that is famous in their niche. And, they might be doing quite well and you would have no idea. And then the person on the other side of you might be just starting and, isn't actually never spoken publicly yet. He or she is just trying to learn how to do it. So
that's awesome, Coach. I want to thank you for giving us a few minutes of your time. We had a blast the first time. We had a blast the second time. So it's good to hear your voice. Good to hear you're still going and reinventing yourself and doing a lot of what seems like important work. So I want to thank you for coming on the show again.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. It's always good to catch up. I'm glad you guys are doing well. I wish you well and with everything that's going on. Hopefully we'll get a break here soon and we can get back out in the world here.
So. Yeah, it'll pass. Everything will pass. We'll be okay. Yeah,
absolutely.
So maybe give us, in the end, maybe just give us a little appreciation of what we got. So maybe it's a somewhat of a good thing overall. So
absolutely
right, right. Yeah, good way to look at it for sure. Yeah. So,
Coach, and just can you just do a quick bumper for the beginning of the episode? Just say, "Hey, this is Coach Jim Johnson. You're listening to Verbal Shenanigans."
Yeah. So, would you like me to do it when you're ready?
Whenever.
Okay. Hey, this is Coach Jim Johnson, and you're ready to listen to Verbal Shenanigans.
Thanks so much, man, and I'll tag you in this and send this to Susan and whatnot when this is up.
Oh, that'd be great. Yeah, so, well, and I'll put it out. And now that I've become the social media, I'll never call myself an expert, but I'm certainly involved in a lot more.
Yeah, so. I can't wait to see you on TikTok doing dance.
Well, that's the crazy thing. Every time I learn, some area of social media that seems to get wiped out, and something is new, or I'm trying to learn something new. So
we have not entered that realm yet. So we haven't stooped there yet, but I'm sure we will. Once we hear it'll boost listens. We'll probably be on there doing dance videos together. So thanks again, Jim.
All right. Wish you well. Good luck.
Take
thanks
care.
For talking.
Have a good night, Coach.
All right. You too. All right, take care. Bye.
Coach Jim Johnson. Coach Jim, one of our – I remember it's got – I don't know, Burl, if you could look that up while I'm just closing this out, but it's been years at this point, and I remember really enjoying that interview back then, and we had – one of the cool things was Coach had shipped us books, and he wrote them out to us, and I thought that was pretty cool, and I still have the book – kind of over in my bookcase and whatnot. It was also in the, I don't know, I kind of consider that like the early days of us starting to get guests and whatnot like that, and starting to really develop a routine on how to get guests. And I remember being recommended Jim, and then remember like looking back at the videos and being like, oh my God, like I remember watching ESPN like every day. Like, and that was like such a huge, at the time, viral kind of big story. So it was really cool to hear from Jim, and it's cool to hear that Jim is still rocking and rolling.
Yeah, absolutely, no doubt. It's always great to see he wasn't just – it's great to look at it in the sense that it wasn't like a one-time story with, oh, okay, he was helping out this kid, and then this happened, and then that was the last we heard from him.
Right.
It's great to see he's still in the community. He's still – working out, he still keeps in touch with J-Mac. I mean, it's an awesome story. It's an awesome story. And I'm not continuing the sentence because I'm still struggling to find what episode he was on. It has nothing to do with that.
Let me see if
whatsoever.
Episode 136. 136.
All right, there you go.
So, yeah, so 136, that would in 2017. So, yeah, 3 years ago. Like, almost to... a little bit more than 3 years ago. So, Coach Jim Johnson, go check him out.
Yep.
Coach Jim Johnson, Mike.
Hell of a man.
Yeah, he's a nice guy. He's like too nice. He's like, way nicer than you or I.
Yeah, yeah. If we were on that basketball team, he would have literally just kept us on the bench. He's like, right. No. The team talked. No. You're not getting in that game. Absolutely not. Coach, I'm thinking about running a marathon. Well, you're probably getting lost, Mike.
Did I ever tell you any of my weird coaching stories? Not me coaching, but coaches I have had in high school.
Ah, share with us.
So, now this sounds so crazy because the times we're in, but my head coach and my JV coach in high school, used to invite me and my friend down to the PNC Art Center, which is down in Holmdel, New Jersey, where they put big concerts on, to go scalp tickets with them and hang out and watch a concert. So,
scalp tickets.
Yep. So a couple times we'd go there and like wait till the show was about to start and get tickets for like $12, $10. Now, interestingly enough, like I saw Paul Simon, Brian Wilson, and it didn't seem weird at the time. And I'm like, yeah, it's my coach, whatever, he's fine. And a couple times we went down there, and they would like give us a beer or two too. It's really, really interesting dynamic, I guess.
How old were you at the time?
17, 18.
17, 18, and your parents had no problems. Mom, just going to the Neil Simon concert. Don't have tickets. Don't know how to get back. And all going with the coach. Love you.
I don't know. I guess not, because it was kind of like senior year and a little after in like college. So I also don't think I revealed too much to them. Like, I didn't really say much. I was like, oh, going down to PNC or whatever, you know?
Oh, that was your little secret party with you and the coach.
Yeah, right? Yeah, yep.
Yeah, he courted all of you, recorded his concert. Yeah. You tell anybody, you snitches get stitches.
I had a couple interesting teachers, man. I had I had a teacher, Mr. Billings, and he was graphic design. I don't know what it was. Like, it was a fun class, but he had like computers in the back, and there was this game, Unreal Tournament, which is kind of like Doom or any of those shooting games. And he had him on there, and I would just be like, "Yeah, I'm not doing my assignment," and go in the back of his thing and just play that game. And you just hear like, "Ooh yeah!" Like when he killed someone. And my buddy still says, "I just remember you being like, yeah, I'm not doing that,' and just walking into the back and just playing these games.
Today we're going to divide fractions. Screw that. Pew, pew, pew.
Yeah. Girl. Almost identical to that. Like, I was like, yeah, I don't care. There was another teacher I was thinking about here. There was Billings. There was one more.
Well, while you're thinking of that, did I ever tell you about the gym coach that basically cheated for other classes to beat our class because he hated our class?
No, but you should.
Yeah, we had I believe his name was Mr. Kavanaugh, and I don't know why he had a bug up his rear with like a lot of us in this class, but like we would have like kickball games would be like our class versus another class.
Mm-hmm.
And he would literally make up rules during the game to basically screw us, and he would wonder why we would be chirping back at him. Like,
give us an example.
Like, we had a kickball game and it was outside.
Yeah.
And I remember at one point one of our team was going second to third, and they had the ball like at shortstop, and they're going to throw it at him. So they threw it. Kid ducks. Like, he was running, so it's kind of like he stops, ducks, and he goes under, goes past it, and he yells, "You're out." And everybody's like, "What do you mean he's out?" And he's like, "I said no sliding. He's not on the ground. He can't." The kid was going like full speed and like literally almost broke his ankles to stop and duck under it. No, they were sliding. It was just every play that was a coin flip magically never went our direction. And like, I even remember like after a game, like he didn't like me, I guess. Like, remember after one game, he said, "And Berlew, I'm sick of you chirping about stuff." And I looked at him like, I didn't say anything. He was like, "Bull."
I mean,
and I'm like in the fifth grade.
I could sympathize with your teacher. Like, I'm kind of sick of you chirping too, bro.
Listen, you play, you call the game straight, we don't have problem. When I see a little crookedness, the Burrows is going to come up with his volume and tell you what's what, I tell you.
What kind of kid were you, like, because I was very, very, still am, very competitive, would do basically do anything to win. What kind of kid were you when it came to, like, gym sports and stuff like that?
Like, playing in gym, I was good. Like, when I'm in the game, I'm going all out. I won't say I won't do anything, you know, illegal or anything like that, or try any cute stuff, but I would look at certain situations like, it, Like if I'm playing kickball and I notice the girls are on the left hand side just chatting,
yeah.
I don't normally kick there, but I'm aiming for there. I will take advantage of that situation.
Nice. So you were very opportunistic, if you will.
Yeah, I wasn't going out to point out one person, but I'm like, all right, they're not taking the game seriously. Jackpot. I'm going for those runs.
So now you weren't trying to hit on them with your kick. You were just trying to disrupt the game a little bit to try to
just kick it in the area. No, they would like people would scream and go like look at each other and like run away. And then I'm like, all right, easy, double, triple, easy.
So you were picking up the weak rather than like maybe a girlfriend or something.
Oh yeah, the weak and definitely the nerdy boys. I would shoot at them like anywhere. I'm like, all right, this is gonna. We got at least two bases here. That's what I'm aiming for easily. Yeah.
I still have kickball memories of the Mets versus the Dodgers final in my middle school. No, elementary school, fifth grade tournament. I was in the Dodgers, unfortunately. But I'll never forget I had a game-winning home run. And it's still, to this day, I can remember as clear as possible. And I remember this kid Tyrese was in the other team. And Tyrese was this kid who like moved in like halfway through fifth grade, like came in and you're like, oh my God. Like, he was probably held back like 2 years. The kid had facial hair in fifth grade, like little like scraggly, like, and he was like, now I was always tall. I was never like the short kid and then had a growth spurt. I was always like kind of tall. And he had like 4 inches on me. I'll never forget. His name was Tyrese Pretlow, and he had like you know, when you're in elementary school, you dress like a doofus. You just wear whatever, you know, some Met shirt or some whatever. He had like stylistic clothes and big baggy jeans back in the day. And you're like, oh my God, it looked like a man was just given to the other team. And you're like, oh my God, Tyrese can probably hit it a mile and. Tyrese could kick the ball a mile, or what it seemed, but we were able to beat Tyrese's team, and it was like the biggest deal in the world. We're like, yeah, go Dodgers! And I still remember it to this day.
So it's almost like a roid scandal. You feel the Mets held on to him for a couple years to make sure they could win the big kickball tournament.
Yeah. And years later, the New York Mets would probably go on to sign Tyrese Pretlow, like you know, like in some bad deal because they heard what he did. But it's amazing how things stick with you.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, I still have memories like of our company softball team. Now, our company softball team was decent. It wasn't the C3.
No way.
Like, we weren't champions, but we...
Who were you playing?
It was a game.
Who were you playing? Were you playing other people in the company or other...
Other companies.
Wow.
It was like a league in Morristown, and this was back in the day when the company actually, like, paid money to make people happy and had activities.
Right.
Like, I remember our shortstop was one of our finance guys, man. He's like 50 years old, but he's one of those, like, if you aren't paying attention when he flings that ball from short,
right.
Like you're going to get a notch right on your, on your chest.
So let me, you had the Ozzie Smith of finance guys playing for yourself. Okay.
Yeah. All right. We had a pretty decent team. Our men's team. We never got a trophy or anything, but like I said, we were competitive, man. I still remember, like, I'd be outfield, be diving for balls. Like, I still remember kind of like the great feeling. I caught one that was like I don't know how to describe it. It was like a mile away, and I just kept sprinting and sprinting, and I basically did like the MLB kind of laid out catch.
Okay.
Hit a dirt pile just perfectly where you get up and you got those mud stains on there. It's like there's no more manly feeling than that. I mean, what all the day that I'm a telephone workforce management person, meaningless. That catch in the outfield, I felt like the greatest man of all time. Like, I feel people in Morristown, New Jersey are still talking about the legend of the Burlew catch.
Now, people talking about it, how many people were watching this amazing game that was going on?
I think maybe two guys had their wives there. Maybe. It was pretty much whoever was playing the game. Nobody was actually there to admire the game.
So you're down to a possibility of two people talking about it.
Yeah, but I'm sure one of those wives is the Gabby type and just told all her friends about the amazing catch I did that day.
You think she was like, what position did you play?
Left or right field.
You think she was like, oh, honey, good job today. You went 0-for-4 at the plate or whatever. Who is that left fielder? What does he do? And they're like, oh, he's the phone guy. Like, oh, my God. Like, look at him. He's unbelievable.
He's covered in dirt. He doesn't even care. That's how much he puts into his art.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's funny. This teaching thing, the other day, our friend KP Burke put up a joke about Ed Gein, the serial killer.
Yep, and good man.
Yeah, yeah. And it churned memories in my head. I had a English teacher senior year where she gave everybody, or I don't know if he had to pick or not, or I can't remember, but we had to do reports on serial killers. Swear to God, everyone, like Ed Gein, Ted Bundy, like everyone had a different one. And I remember knowing a lot about Ed Gein, like how he made like furniture out of women's faces and belts out of their nipples and all these horrific things. And I'm like, that would never fly today. Never. Like, yeah, going to a concert with your, you know, teacher or whatever, one thing. But like, I can't imagine where they would even fit in, like, oh, let's do reports on serial killers and how they killed women and tortured them. I cannot imagine that in high schools today.
So I'm trying to picture. So is there a natural buildup to it? Like they're talking about, like, you know, horrific things and then, like, let's do a report on a specific murderer? Or is it just like, you're done with your last assignment. In 2 weeks, tell me about a bloody murder.
If I'm not mistaken, and I could be, but it doesn't matter. There's no fact checkers here. I thought it was, looking back, I think it was around Halloween. Like it was an October assignment. Like, do research on a serial killer. Which is... Can you imagine nowadays, like, parents be like, what are you guys learning about? Oh, you know, Ted Bundy was really manipulative. Like, I don't know. It just, I don't know what she got out of that either. So, really strange. Like, maybe she was doing research, or maybe she was like, and I still remember her, because we had to pick him or choose him. And I was like, Ed Gein, or however I said it. And I remember her being like, oh, that's a good one. That's a good, like, she had her knowledge base of this too. Maybe she was like one of those idolizers.
Now, was this just a written report or an oral report?
I don't know.
Like, I could just imagine like an oral report and like she's in the back of the room. Yes.
Yes.
Continue.
Yes. He did do that. He did.
No,
that.
No. Scotty, more details.
He did do that. No,
what did he do with that body? What did he do? That's person number 4, Scotty, not person number 7.
I don't know. Just weird. It's weird how, and I don't consider myself to have a good memory at all. It's one thing I actually wish that I did have better of. I wish I had a better long-term memory. Like middle school for me is very blurry. High school is becoming a little bit more blurry for me. Elementary school, I remember a couple teachers, but middle school, I feel like I blocked out the entire thing. I have like almost no memories of middle school. And I wish there was something I could take to like enhance my long-term memory.
Like you would take a pill just so you can remember all those awkward times in middle school where you quivered at seeing girls.
Yeah, pretty much. I don't know. Just like I think to have more of a perspective on things, you know, I'm bringing a child into this world, and I wish that I could remember a lot more than I could. I don't know. It's like, is your memory sharp from those days?
I never had like great memories to begin with. So, I mean, I could technically remember parts about it, but there's nothing about it where it's like, I have stories where I wanted to hold on to anything. So well, I really don't care what I've forgotten about.
Well, put it this way. Like, I like when I hear my dad talk about like his childhood and his dad, good or bad. I like to hear it. And you know, when you're a kid, you're like, ah, whatever, dad. But as you get older, you're like, this is actually interesting. I want to know this stuff. And I have one aunt who's like the family historian who knows everything. And I sat down with her. It was great. But like, I like to hear from my dad's perspective, and I don't get a lot of it. Like, so I'm hoping one day my kids will be like, hey, dad, what did you do during this time? And be like, I hope I remember. I know I interviewed a hippo attack survivor once. Like, that's all I can tell you.
Daddy, what was school like for you?
I wrote about serial killers.
Yeah.
I got straight A's. Now clean your room. That serial killer was me.
But on that note, Burglo, let's get the hell out of here.
Yeah, nothing says goodbye like serial killers.
For real, yeah. I mean,
yeah, literally, it's like, see you in the afterlife. Bye.
Boop.
I think that's what Ted Bundy did. He had a little theme song before he did his deed.
Did he?
I don't know. And my wife's still afraid that Ted Bundy had a child and he's going to go out and kill people one day.
So your wife thinks that he had a child and he's going to follow in his footsteps and just be like, I want to be like dad, and just murder everybody.
Yeah, she literally thinks it's like a plot to a horror movie where like the sheriff kills the murderer in town.
Right.
But it's like, oh, damn, Wild Bill Matters had a son and he's coming for revenge. Like she's somewhere. See, I think it's more she's afraid of killers. And then you go, yeah, but that one's dead. And she's like, but what if they have a child? And it's like, well, I don't know if like murder is hereditary, babe. Yeah. I really don't.
Too many movies.
Yeah. And it's usually something silly. It's like, I want the bedroom door window open. And she's like, no, somebody can break in. Nobody's going to break in. Why doesn't Ted Bundy Jr. breaks in? I'll make a pot of coffee. I don't know what to tell you. Hey, in this bud, scenario.
Would you do a podcast about your dad?
Yeah. Listen, I know what you're about to do, but hear me out. Trevor Shenanigans audience has been growing in these last few weeks. Did you know we're part of the DCN Community Network, a podcast?
Well, Perlo, on that note, anything to promote before we go?
To continue with local businesses, I'm going to promote Tom and Chi in Kennesaw, Georgia. They were featured on, I believe, Shark Tank of a few years back. They have a wonderful place to eat and all handcrafted melts, homemade soups, delicious donuts. They make this grilled cheese donut dessert that me and my wife absolutely love. We haven't been able to get it for obvious reasons lately. But, you know, as we've been saying, please help support these small businesses. They're located in Kennesaw, Georgia. They offer takeout and delivery. Absolutely delicious donuts and grilled cheese sandwiches. Check out Tom and Chi.
I actually recognize that name from Shark Tank, I guess. Interesting. And I will support a friend of ours, a friend of mine.
It's not my friend?
No, you don't know this guy. But he is, him and his family, his grandma was started sewing these masks, and his girlfriend or whatnot is taking off with this, and they are doing mask orders, you know, like for, you know, masks and sewing them and whatnot. And they are called U-Mask. It's all college universities. You get their logos on your mask while this pandemic is going on, and they donate 10% of every purchase to the hospital of that college. So Penn State, they would donate to the Penn State Hospital or whatever, they're Michigan, Villanova, whatever, all over the country. They're making masks because That might be the new normal for God. I bet you'll be the new normal all the way through the summer at least.
Unless you're in Georgia, but continue.
Yeah, yeah. So I got everything from Penn State to Virginia to Rutgers to West Virginia to Maryland, all sorts of logos and whatnot. So go check them out. UMask, U-Mask. Support the healthcare workers and whatnot. So, guys, that's it. I want to thank Coach Jim Johnson for coming back. He was one of our favorite guests back in the day and still remains so. And that's it. Share the podcast if you can. Listen to it and comment on it. Life is funny. Laugh at it and keep the wind at your back, brah.
See you, people. Good night, Ted Bundy Jr.
But it's still alright.